is 22-2106 Rogers v. Riggs, and Ms. Burke, you're here for the appellant. You may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Heather Burke, and I'm the attorney for Alessandra Nicole Rogers, the appellant. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. The district court committed reversible error by raising an issue sua sponte that had not been raised or argued by appellees, and looked at the undeveloped factual record in a light least favorable to appellant to rule against enforcing her First Amendment rights.
But the district court did provide notice that this was an important issue to it, right? With its denial of the 12B6, it highlighted that.
It did not provide notice in the summary judgment motion, if you're referring to the previous years.
I'm saying the district court had raised this as a concern, and so everybody was on guard that the district court was looking at that particular issue. It didn't come out of a blue sky, in other words.
I did not interpret it that way in its opinion, because its opinion in July of 2021 was dealing more with the due process issue and the fact that it believed that it was a well-established matter of law that the First Amendment would be implicated there. I did not interpret it that way, and I don't believe that appellees did either. This appeal can be reversed both procedurally and substantively. Procedurally, the district court improperly abandoned its role as neutral arbiter and raised new arguments against Ms. Rogers without a full factual record to support them, and in a light least favorable to her, and offered her no opportunity to respond to that.
Does it matter on the notice issue that this is a pure issue of law?
Well, it's a pure issue of law that turns on questions of fact. We know that the Supreme Court has stated that the content, form, and context in Connick v. Myers are the determinative factors of whether or not a public concern, or whether or not the speech is a public concern. And those are questions of fact.
But you make the argument, as I understand it, that there was abundant evidence of racism, and that had you put on notice, then you would have presented that. Now, how would that have borne on the context of the actual piece of paper, the petition? The petition said whatever it did, you know, whether it was supportable by other extrinsic evidence of racism or not, the document spoke for itself. How does that additional evidence bear on the context of the actual petition and its public or private character?
So in the actual petition, the only person mentioned by name was Sergeant Pedro Morales. And the statement was, I believe what is happening to Sergeant Morales is an act of retaliation. Now, we know from significant case law that sometimes the difference between retaliation and discrimination, there isn't one, right? It can be a disparate act for some reason, whether it's protected conduct or because you're a certain race or religion or gender. Those things, that the act itself can be one and the same, and the Supreme Court has held, in fact, that retaliation can be discrimination.
But it's pure speculation based on the petition whether there was race or sex discrimination here. I mean, it doesn't say anything about race. It says harassment. It says wrongdoing. That could cover dozens of scenarios in a workplace. You know, if there's an allegation of race discrimination against Sergeant Morales, it seems like the petition would say that, or at least give some foundational facts.
This is 45 people, right? This is a petition meant to apply to as many people as possible to get the critical mass they needed to try and make change, because the context of this was that for 5 years, people had been going to the administration saying, this environment is sexually hostile. We're always, you know, we walk in on these people having an affair.
The petition doesn't, let me change my question a bit. I mean, it's a vague petition. Oh. I mean, I think you could accept that. And, you know, the case law here says that we have to conclude that this raises from a level of private concern, workplace concern, to something of public concern. And certainly race discrimination, sex discrimination training, all in the right context, could probably achieve those that level. But here you have a document that's, you know, one paragraph that is vague and, you know, illusory. If I, you know, I read this and you can't conclude that there's an allegation of race or sex discrimination.
I think
definitively, can you?
I mean, the key is that the parties who knew all of the facts surrounding did not dispute this as a matter of public concern, because everybody knew what was involved in this. Everybody, the people it was delivered to the county commissioners. They didn't question that. In fact, we only know that one county commissioner sought to speak with the county manager about the jail administrator because he knew this was about the jail administrator.
Well, does it matter that we, you know, the three of us, the public, who doesn't have the insider knowledge, does it matter that our interpretation of the petition wouldn't lead us to conclude that there were specific allegations of race or sex discrimination?
I think that at that point, the public concern is whether or not the public would be concerned if this was developed, right? And if this was brought to light, which is what they were trying to do. Now, most of the guards at the jail had maybe a high school education, right? This is not a well-educated section of society necessarily. Another important fact to that question, though, is that the people who signed this petition were almost all of the middle management of the jail. There's the jail administrator, the chief of security, and those were the people that they were trying to lodge complaints against. All but one of the lieutenants, which are the third in command, signed this petition. All but two of the sergeants signed this petition. All of the corporals signed this petition. It was the people who were in a position who had been trying to, like, make things better for the whole group of people and stop the constitutional violations they saw. People had just been sexually harassed and battered at this time.
Why didn't they just say that? Sergeant Morales is being discriminated because of his race. Somebody else is being discriminated because of her sex.
Because they're not attorneys. Right, they're lay people who don't know how to do these things properly. I mean, okay, the grammar's not even right in this
statement.
Well,
that circles back to my question. What do we do about, you know, this is speech, you know, First Amendment case. What do we do about vague speech that's engaged in by non-attorneys? But, you know, we've got to decide whether this is private or public.
There's a significant body of case law saying that speech does not have to be eloquent to be protected. This is ineloquent. We can all acknowledge that. We would all have done a better job if we had written this petition.
Well, we don't know what we had written because we don't know what the facts are. You're assuming that it's all of these other things, but they didn't write that.
No, we know what the facts were because we have all the other complaints that were lodged leading up to this. We know that 2 months before this, in fact, several days before this petition was delivered, my client had just reported the sexual assault and battery of one of the sergeants at work.
And this is getting into another subject, which is you've raised a lot of matters that weren't before the district court. What are we supposed to do with those?
Well, because we didn't receive those at the time that we were supposed to have received those, there were definitely lots of issues with discovery at that time and still. Those are offered merely to show that there would have been facts developed in the record that would have led us to show better that this was a matter of public concern. And because this was only a summary judgment, we're supposed to be construing this in a light most favorable to the appellant, which would lean us towards saying, well, these things could be a matter of public concern, and that's the light most favorable to the appellant. We could have developed much more facts about why everybody signed it, what was going on for each of those 45 people, but there's not a whole lot of case law that's anything like this factually. Almost all the case law is about a single individual who complained about something, usually privately, usually in a letter, usually sometimes in speech. But this is a petition. It was meant to be a petition. It wasn't delivered to the chain of command. It was delivered to elected officials. It was meant to be protected speech. It invokes protection from retaliation.
We're in a qualified immunity situation also. You know, even if we, you know, grant, you know, credit your claim that there's a constitutional violation, you still have to show that it was clearly established that a reasonable public official would know this is a petition involving a matter of public concern. Given the unique facts here, what's the, you know, the best case that establishes the, or satisfies the clearly established prong?
Well, we would argue that this was already decided in July of 2021 when the district court ruled that it was clearly established for her First Amendment
rights.
That
was on the motion to dismiss. Now we're in the summary judgment stage.
Yes, and well, both of them looked outside of the four corners of the pleadings, but yes, defendants did not appeal that decision at that time, and we would argue that they waived their right to have that reconsidered.
Well, they couldn't appeal it. It would have been interlocutory.
For the motion to dismiss?
Right. By the time it became the final appealable decision, they had won. So.
Okay. In that circumstance, then, any of the cases you look at, Wren versus Spurlock, you would also have... Conway versus Smith would be a good one for that. That shows the bringing to light any actual or potential wrongdoing or breach of public trust is a matter of public concern. Again, all of the people in this case, there's evidence suggesting they thought that these guards were trying to unionize. Right, that was what the discussions early on were, and so they knew that there was a public concern and a concerted effort happening here.
One of the difficulties is you have David versus Denver, which says, as I understand it, complaints about workplace conditions are prototypical private matters, that those do not, you know, implicate a public concern. And so you have this, you're pointing very ably to the provision about the retaliation as a synonym for the discrimination, the request for protection against retaliation. Going back to Judge Tempovich's question, and this is what I struggle with a little bit, is the specificity. You're pointing out that the recipient of this information were going to be these public officials, but as I understand our precedent in Moore versus Winniewood, is the audience that we're looking at is the public. And would this information have been sufficiently specific to have alerted the public that there is this public concern? And so that's where I come back a little bit to the same concern that Judge Tempovich is asking about. If you just look at the language itself, without the benefit of these external evidence, was there enough to say that Morales was the subject of retaliation? Was there enough in that to have alerted the public that, yes, there is something beyond just workplace conditions, that this really needs to be looked at as more of a public concern, like in some of these other cases that you identified?
Well, I would argue that only then looks at the one element rather than the three required by the Supreme Court, because you focus only on content and not enough on context. And again, I think any time that 45 people are brave enough to sign their names to something that could get them fired, I think that is a public concern. The fact that more than half of the jail signed this petition, it is a public concern, regardless of what their communications were. And these were not new employees. These were people who had worked there for well over a decade. And they said, this is a dangerous place to work now. Everybody's quitting. We can't get enough people to work here. There's a lot of stuff going on.
But don't you acknowledge?
No, go ahead.
But aren't workplace conditions, aren't those not public concerns?
Well, there's an overlap to that. In Wren versus Spurlock, for example, high faculty turnover was considered a public concern. And the same would be true for high jail guard turnover, certainly. Okay. To the same end.
I know you're almost out of time, but yeah. We do have here the alternative explanation for the suspension, which was the discovery of the contraband here, and as an independent justification for the adverse employment action. What's your response to that?
We have a significant amount of evidence now that shows that they were trying to paper her file. They came up with a removable hard drive that nobody had seen in 2 years that suddenly was my client's fault because it went missing, but there's no logs, there's no inventory for it. And then right after that, suddenly the jail was searched, but the pictures that they found the contraband for were taken the day before the search of the jail, which shows that they found the contraband before they made a big production of going in. Now, everybody knew, and in the internal investigations that appellees themselves conducted, every person they talked to said, oh yeah, we all knew that this was being used for tours and training. This had been being used for well over a decade. You know, we brought people in and showed them how inmates would fashion syringes out of a bar of soap.
Is your answer that there's a fact question there or something else?
There's a significant fact question there. There's a lot of inconsistent testimony, inconsistent facts about when they knew that this shakedown was going to happen. The fact that the timing was only a few weeks after this petition. The fact that it went from the hard drive and then suddenly as soon as the shakedown happened, nobody cared about the hard drive anymore. It just became a non-concern. We don't know whatever happened to that hard drive. There's a lot of facts there that, and just the mere fact that out of the entire shakedown of the jail, the only people who were escorted out of the facility and placed on leave were the three people who were known to have done the petition. And they found drugs in the purse of somebody that were actually illegal, that it was without a prescription, it was Xanax or something. And they did nothing to that person, but the people that didn't even work in the department where the contraband was found anymore were all escorted out.
All right, thank you, counsel. Let's hear from the county. Ms. Martinez.
Good morning. May it please the court. I represent the county defendants in this matter, and we are requesting that this court affirm Judge Skovdahl's opinion concerning the second prong of the Garcetti-Pickering analysis. In this case, as this court has already pointed out, what is relevant is the writing submitted by the plaintiff, the protected, alleged protected speech. And as this court has noted, the protected speech falls short of what is required to establish a matter of public concern. And as Judge Bacharach pointed out, Moore versus City of Wynwood expressly requires that we look beyond the general topic of the speech to evaluate more specifically what is said on the topic. So we have to look at what is contained in the plaintiff's speech to see whether, in fact, it's a matter of public concern.
On the other hand, you know, we do have Moore versus Wynwood, but we also have our precedents about Rule 56. And so we have to view the evidence, in this case, the petition itself, with the light most favorable to the plaintiff. So how do you address sort of the interplay between those two considerations on the provision in the petition that there was a lack of training? Can't a reasonable fact finder infer, viewing the evidence and inferences favorably to the plaintiff, that if a jail official says that there, and particularly if 45 people endorse this, that there is a lack of training for these jail officials, wouldn't that alarm probably most of us in the public?
Well, Your Honor, I think this court already pointed out that the plethora of case law in this jurisdiction requires that the matter be a matter of public concern, not a personnel matter, not an issue that relates solely to that person's employment. And the contentions concerning the training are vague. They are not clear in any manner. The judge was very careful to state and list all of the allegations contained in the plaintiff's petition. And that petition was drafted by the plaintiff according to her deposition testimony. And the allegation is, I feel I have not received proper training. That is incredibly vague. It's not clear what the training relates to. And going back to the Moore case, the information has to, it says, an employee's speech must not merely relate generally to a subject matter that is a public interest, but must sufficiently inform the issue as to be helpful to the public in evaluating the conduct of the government. And so that statement is so general and so vague, it does not inform the public about the nature of the deficient training.
Even if 45 people felt like they had been inadequately trained.
Your Honor, I could not find a single case that talks about if someone gets their friends and coworkers to sign a petition complaining about the way the administrator is operating the facility, that the number increases whether or not it becomes a matter of public concern. It's the nature of the speech and the content of the speech. So counsel is correct. It's content, form, and context. And in this case, we have the content, and the content falls short of what's required to establish a matter of public concern. And Judge Scobdell was very careful to analyze all aspects of the plaintiff's speech and found that it was too vague in general to rise to the level of public concern.
Yeah,
and he made a
legal... If this fails as one complainant, one petitioner, but isn't there some, contextually, if 46 people are willing to go out on a limb on that, doesn't that maybe transform what might be a one-on-one workplace incident to something that's more systemic? I think that's what opposing counsel is trying to say. And, it's not purely a numbers game, but if you have a large percentage of a workplace population that's willing to sign on to something to that, especially at detention center, Chavez County, maybe the public would be alarmed by that.
Well, Your Honor, Mr. Korn had been the detention administrator, and he'd certainly been there for a long time. And so I believe that this speech was nothing more than many individuals complaining about his leadership and his operation of the facility, which there's not a single allegation of malfeasance. There's not a single allegation of corruption. There's not a single allegation of mistreatment of inmates. So
there might be, depending on how you interpret wrongdoing, harassment, favoritism. I mean, those might lend themselves to an allegation of corruption.
Or that those could all relate to the alleged mistreatment of Sergeant Morales, whatever that was, which had already occurred. So there's a million ways to interpret this. And what counsel wants the court to do is interpret all the discussions that anybody could have had with the administration at any time in a 3 or 5 year period prior to this petition and determine the context. But that would preclude anybody from ever getting summary judgment or anybody from ever determining what the nature of the speech was, because the discovery and the discussion about what it related to could go on forever.
I know you resist this interpretation, but if we did interpret the petition to make a plausible allegation of race, sex discrimination, and poor training, would you agree with me that those could be matters of public concern?
They could be, Your Honor, but I think one of the main problems is that the word discrimination is not contained anywhere in this petition. That word is not in the petition. There's an argument in the appellate brief that this falls under the case law. It's the Jackson case where the Supreme Court interpreted Title IX and said that retaliation could be discrimination under that particular fact pattern. That's not this fact pattern. There's no allegation of invidious discrimination or discrimination against any particular class anywhere in that petition. It just says generically retaliation concerning Mr. Morales. And so it's not clear what the nature of the retaliation could even be. And so it's just so vague, Your Honor, that it's not... that Judge Scobdell properly determined that as a matter of law, it failed to...
Other than more, what are the best cases that support your interpretation of the facts here?
I think, Your Honor, the cases cited by the court in the opinion are the best cases. And specifically, the court cites Huff, which is a district court opinion. He cites the Brommer case, which is an excellent opinion, which discusses specifically a whole litany of personnel issues that don't constitute a matter of public concern. And then, of course, there's multiple Supreme Court opinions that discuss matters of public concern. And The main one there, I think, is the Connick versus Myers case, which is the seminal case on what is a matter of public concern. Which
does it matter that many of the people who signed were not employed there any longer? In other words, they wouldn't be complaining for personal reasons so much as public reasons if they're not employed there, the argument would go.
And I understand that argument, but the problem with that is, again, they're still complaining about their dislike of the jail administrator, Mr. Korn. And even the arguments by counsel here today are that people didn't like Mr. Korn and the way he operated the jail. Well, again, that's a personality issue. It's a personal issue, maybe a personnel issue. But it certainly doesn't address any matters, no malfeasance, no corruption, no mistreatment of inmates, nothing that would alert the public to you know, caring about. It's, you know, I don't like Mr. Korn. I think he has favorites. I'm not getting the promotion I like. This court and the Supreme Court has routinely found that those issues are not matters of public concern. And then finally, in footnote 3 of Judge Skovdahl's opinion, he did grant the defendant's motion for summary judgment with regard to qualified immunity, and that really wasn't ever sufficiently addressed in the underlying briefings before the district court. The defendant did make a showing that it was entitled to qualified immunity on count 2, which is plaintiff's First Amendment retaliation claim. We established that the plaintiff was in possession of contraband. We provided the court with photographs of the contraband that she had unsecured under her desk that was discovered during the raid. I provided this court with, in the appellate briefing, of the statute in New Mexico that makes it a crime to be in possession of contraband such as that. It also violated internal policies. We produced to the district court an affidavit from the decision maker, who was the county manager, that some marijuana seed pods were found in the possession of another lieutenant. He was similarly disciplined as the plaintiff was for being in possession of that contraband. And so the defendant has established that it was also entitled to qualified immunity in this matter. That was also granted.
One of the things that I didn't see in your answer brief, but I do remember you arguing all of those things, but I don't remember you identifying your alternative argument for affirmance, but saying you never mentioned prong 4, prong 5. And so I was left to guess, well, maybe the county is arguing alternative grounds for affirmance based on prong 4 or prong 5. And I'm not being critical, but I was a little struggling. How can I say that that we should affirm on an alternative ground for affirmance based on a prong that the county hasn't identified?
And I apologize for that, Your Honor, if I didn't do a complete enough job briefing those prongs.
And I don't mean it critically. I'm just saying I wasn't sure what prong that you're referring to.
Well, I mean, primarily, Your Honor, I endorse Judge Skovdahl's finding that as a matter of law, the plaintiff didn't make speech that was a matter of public concern. But with regard to prongs 4 and 5, the plaintiff, even if she could establish that the speech was a motivating factor, which I think she falls short because the timing, based on the information that's in the briefing, the discipline didn't happen for 6 months about approximately until after the speech was made. But the issue is whether the defendant would have reached the same employment decision in the absence of the alleged protected conduct. And we provided the court with information that we disciplined another lieutenant who was found to be in possession of a marijuana seed. He was also...
So your argument is prong 5?
Yes, Your Honor.
Not prong 4, prong 5.
I think, you know, we could muddy the waters with prong 4, but I think the strongest argument is prong 5. She was disciplined to a similarly situated male Hispanic employee, and she was disciplined for the contraband that was found under her desk. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counselor excused, and the case shall be submitted.